Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
And maybe what I find most interesting about collaboration is thinking of collaboration not just in terms of like content or like what we're going to do today, but thinking of collaboration in terms of style. So like how the interaction with the people and how that relationship doesn't just affect what you portray but more how you portray it. So almost getting into like the very genetics of the film itself.
This is the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. Much of what we've explored this season on the podcast has centered around the relationship between the filmmaker and the film subjects, and perhaps understandably. This dynamic is rich in almost every documentary film. Sometimes it's a love fest, sometimes it's fraught, and it's almost always complicated. This week, we talk with filmmaker Carmine Grimaldi, who screened three shorts this year at True False. One of the Roughs, A Cosmos, Servicing Guide, and If Only There Were Peace, which was co-directed with Dennis Tortum. Each film deals with a wildly different subject, but there is one through thread. The bonds Grimaldi forms with his subjects lead to an unusual kind of collaboration. True False programmer Abby Sun spoke with Grimaldi about how collaboration has worked in his films and how he's rediscovering it in his latest project. They started their conversation with the short film One of the Roughs, A Cosmos, an impressionistic portrait of a father and his daughter on a New England sheep farm.
What gave me entry into having this conversation with you in the first place is your short, One of the Roughs, A Cosmos, in which you wrote in the description, this is a collaborative film. There's a lot of gestures in the film that to me spoke to something that was maybe not just an idea or a scenario that both of you came up with and that Maggie May, the subject that she enacted, which I think would be a really direct way of doing a collaboration, but maybe even just the whole presentation, the way it was edited, kind of the whole atmosphere was sort of suffused with the feeling of Maggie May and Bill as characters. I'm really curious how you settled on collaboration.
So the reason I decided to do it initially, I think I was working on some other projects that are much more sort of in the idiom of observational film, and I had become really frustrated with that, and really frustrated with the people who were seeing it, really frustrated with the way I was as a camera person and as a person interacting. I think I was at a period making movies where I was sort of feeling overwhelmed by sort of, I guess overwhelmed by a certain sort of observational way. And I really wanted just to like play and just to have fun and to see what that would do. And so initially it was just to go do something sort of silly rather than some conceptual or like artistic vision even. The thing that surprised me maybe when doing it is like, you know, there's only so much you can do like playing with a camera, I guess, or like often you need to do a little bit more to make it maybe more interesting rather than just like, you know, me and a kid like running around with sheep, you know. And I think what struck me during that, and maybe what I find most interesting about collaboration, is thinking of collaboration not just in terms of like content or like what we're going to do today, but thinking of collaboration in terms of style. So like how the interaction with the people and how that relationship doesn't just affect what you portray but more how you portray it. So almost getting into like the very genetics of the film itself.
A quick note, as you heard, we're discussing several of Carmine's films. Their conversation is about to shift from One of the Roughs, A Cosmos, to his film about a foreclosure inspector nicknamed The Beast. The film's full title is Servicing Guide, Fannie Mae Single Family, Subpart A4-2.1-02, Property Inspection, Vendor Management and Oversight, 11-12-2014.
I mean, I think it makes sense looking at your work because the three films that I've seen, they are so different in style. And to me, all three of them are on some, I mean, very obviously in collaborations with subjects in these certain ways, like with Servicing Guide, the fact that it you use footage that the Beast filmed himself. So I think it that definitely does reflect that collaboration on the level that you're speaking of is not necessarily just consent forms or anything like that, but is something deeper that suffuses, like you're taking something more from the subjects than just like, yes, you can film me.
I think like almost like a platonic ideal for me in terms of documentary is like where I would never have like, where there wouldn't be like an identifiable style. Right. Because like, you know, I mean, obviously there is there's like quirks or things that I'm interested in that I gravitate towards. But if every process with the people you're filming is organic enough and like open enough on both sides and reciprocal enough, like ideally there shouldn't be like a style each time. It would shift with each person and become inflected with a sort of reciprocal relationship between the two.
This thought came into my head and I'm like really curious, maybe like this more collaborative way of working, if what you're trying to do is to try to get to know people, why not like try to see things from their end? And if you're trying to make a film like that, maybe that's what helps lead to that.
Yeah, instead of like representing them or telling their story, like allow their sort of personality to begin to like drip into the film, to begin to infuse it. Something that really interests me is like is making that like a little bit unstable though. So like in the film about the Beast, the foreclosure film, like to have it at have that like have that subjectivity or where that or who is positioned where to sort of shift or be like ever so slightly changing or sort of liquid at times. And so like at the end with the camera sort of just going around during like his inspection, it's not really clear who it is. And maybe at times it sort of shifts who you think it is, or maybe it doesn't matter at some point. So which is to say like not to allow their subjectivity to completely subsume the piece, but to allow there to be almost like a push and pull or a sort of ebb and flow between different poles or different gravitational fields or something.
Coming up, we'll hear Carmine Grimaldi talk about what he means when he says collaboration and how the term has been used as of late. First, we'll hear an interview from Tim Pilcher. It features Boaz Balakhshan, an animator and designer who came to True False in 2017. In this clip, we hear Boaz working with students at Lee Expressive Arts Elementary School here in Colombia.
Do you guys know how many frames actually should be in a second of animation?
A lot.
10. A lot is a good answer. Yes?
I think 16 or 12.
Good answer. Let's see what else comes up.
25.
6. Good.
So I'm Boaz, and I come from Israel. I do documentary animated films. I can give you one tip for working with stop motion, with 3D, which I think will be very helpful for you. Many people, when they first approach stop motion, to work with 3D, they fight a lot with gravity, because then you have something 3D, and it's just kind of like sitting there, and you're trying to put it there, but it falls down. There is a technique that I kind of developed, and I call it 2.5D, which is kind of using the illusion of film while you're working with animation to create something that really looks 3D, but it is not necessarily in the same language. So I built myself a kind of a table, okay? Now, here I work with glass, yeah? So these are glass slates, and in the bottom I put a kind of a 3D set, okay? So I make the set already, but you can use also a 2D set. And then you have the glass plates, and on the glass plates, on the different ones, I work with puppets that I make. Now the puppets, what's interesting about it is that on one side of them, from the top, he is very 3D, but from the bottom, he's completely flat.
So what happens is that when you shoot this from here, right, this is where your camera is, then you get the feeling that you're working with 3D, but you don't have to fight with the gravity and have things fall down. So it's a very good technique to still work with 3D stop motion, but on the other hand, not fight with gravity so much.
Oh my God! That's amazing! Uh-oh. Did I do something wrong?
Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, True False programmer Abby Sun is discussing collaboration with filmmaker Carmine Grimaldi. Though filmmaking might be considered one of the most collaborative arts, Carmine interprets collaboration a bit differently in his work. As he tells Abby, his newest project, which centers on a carnival, has led him to re-examine the meaning of the term.
There's this article that IndieWire published almost immediately after the U.S. documentary competition lineup was announced, where they interviewed all of the directors of the documentaries in the Sundance competition, and they asked them, do you collaborate with your subjects? Just like a one-sentence question, and almost every single director responded, and I found it really interesting because most of them did say, all of them actually said, yes, I absolutely collaborate with my subjects. My subjects are my collaborators. And a couple of them specifically pointed out consent forms or releases. I also found it really interesting that the directors did say, yes, my subjects are my collaborators, but you hardly ever hear that term in terms of a filmmaker-subject relationship. But you're like, I wouldn't say different, because there are obviously filmmakers who do use that term, but I don't know, like, what is it about the term for you, I guess, specifically?
I don't want to let you down, but I'm not super invested in the term collaborator. I sort of like, so in the foreclosure film, I say, like, starring the Beast. And it's just sort of like, I think, you know, the different terms just sort of amusing to like reposition how the viewer thinks about it. So in the case of Maggie Mae and Bill, I wanted to use collaborator because I went into it with the idea of playing and with the idea of experimenting and sort of being a little bit less I guess there's sort of like a sort of dour seriousness that I often associate with like the camera person standing there and sort of like filming, pretending they're not there in the room. And like, there's something sort of glum about it. And I wanted to highlight, and I wanted to sort of emphasize that playfulness. The way I structured the film, it was trying to play with the different modes of documentary. And so as the film progresses, it becomes like a little bit more observational, and it becomes a little bit more dialogue heavy, conversational. The camera's position seems less sort of interacting with them, and it's less sort of magical or dreamlike. And I wanted to sort of see how I could shift those different modes. And then in the final shot, like there's this sort of long shot where you're sort of spying on them through the tree, and at the last moment, it's a weird shot because you're always so close to her, and then she's really, really far away, and you're like looking through the leaves, and then there seems like there's something like gross or voyeuristic maybe about it. In some ways, maybe like the film, I was trying to sort of explore the different possibilities of collaboration or see what its limits were or what it aesthetically could produce. And so for that one, I said collaborating. For the Beast, where I thought of him as kind of like this amazing movie star, I said starring. You know, it's more sort of like my internal games than any sort of statement on documentary itself, I guess.
It did stick out to me because it's an unusual turn of phrase, definitely.
And it's something to be said about sort of collaborative film. And I think, like, you know, collaborative film, I think, is definitely, like, you know, it doesn't surprise me that everybody would say that they're doing collaborative, that their films are collaborative. And I think there's sort of this moment right now where in some ways collaborative films are being plumbed in these, like, incredibly rich, aesthetically exciting, like, intellectually provocative ways. And I think in other ways, saying your film's collaborative is sort of a way of dealing with the ethical weight of a film, or the ethical weight of filmmaking. And I think there's this sort of mistaken idea that collaborative filmmaking is somehow like a more decent or more ethical or more good-natured way to make a film, which I think it like definitely isn't. But it's a way of sort of maybe protecting yourself or sort of showing to the world that like you're not some like, you know, authoritarian person making a film that exploits, you know, people who had no say in it or something like that.
That's a really fascinating point that you make to me, especially because I think there is a turn towards a lot of people talking about films generating empathy as being a good thing. And something that's collaborative obviously would give more voice to people, right? Would maybe be the conventional thinking. So this term is like more gentle than like shooting a subject, which is very violent in its meaning.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of like ethical, I mean, one of the reasons I went into playing with collaborative film was exactly that. Like I was frustrated with some of the observational stuff I was doing and the way that the footage was being received and the way the footage was being seen, and it wasn't in line with what I had hoped by any means, and people thought of it as more ethically fraught than I did, or thought that those ethical problems were indefensible in a way that maybe I didn't. And so I think one of the reasons, in addition to the playfulness, was like trying to think of how to make a film in like a more decent way. And the moment that I realized how false that was when I was, I've been working for a while in this big mess of a project about a carnival. And, you know, the film is like also like a palimpsest of the moment of like different styles of my shooting. And like, you know, so like over like the last 4 years, and like at one point I'm filming one way and now another way. And it's like maybe more or less collaborative in an overt way. And so I've been spending time with this guy who used to work at the carnival named Buddy. And he's living with his partner Sheila, and they're living, you know, in a small town in Kentucky. And I spent a lot of time with them this summer, living with them. And that was, you know, that was the first time in the Carnival project that I introduced the idea of like, let's make a film together. You know, what can we do? You know, how can I take things from him to sort of inflect the style of the film? And so he and I would script out things, play with different things he could perform. We would like go and do these like elaborate weird shoots. And he suggested, he's like, you know, I want to tell my old lady that I'm leaving her and going to the carnival. And I'm like, oh, buddy, you know, I don't feel good about that, but I think that sounds terrible. He's like, no, it'll be great. I'll just drop it on her, and her reaction's going to be so natural. And this is also really funny, because, like, Buddy is the most wooden, sort of, like, obvious actor you've ever seen. And, like, actually, she was, like, a very, sort of very subtle and naturalistic actor. And you can't really tell when she is, but you can always tell when Buddy's acting. So this conceit is already really funny. And I'm like, no, like, I felt too weirded out by, like, tormenting Sheila in this way. And so I said no. And then it was, like, a day later, and I'm filming him on the porch. And he just, like, looks at the camera with this, like, sly, mischievous look. And then he looks back at Sheila, and he's like, Sheila, I'm leaving you today, and I'm going to the carnival. And I'm like, oh, shit, what am I gonna... And then she's all upset, and he's going on. And I as I watch him, like, at first it seems performed. And like I said, Buddy, it's very obvious when Buddy's acting. And then slowly it's no longer performed. And, like, he's really in it. And it goes back and forth to the point where, like, at first I was going to be like, Buddy, don't do this. Like, because I would know that he was acting, and just kind of cut it off, because I don't want to torment his partner. But there was too much gradient, and it wasn't clear. And as time went by, it was clear that, like, he was using me as an alibi to maybe express something he wanted to say, or to sort of act on an impulse he's been feeling. and it gave like a space that was safe to do that for him, right? Like, because he always has plausible deniability, and so this goes on for hours, and they argue, and it becomes real. I mean, they're arguing, and he's like talking about leaving in a very serious way, and then he calms down, and he's like, "Oh, I was just doing that for karma. It was all a movie." And she looks at me and she's like, "What did you do?" And I'm like, no, Sheila, it wasn't me. It was Buddy, you know, or like, I didn't realize this was going to, and of course I was by no means innocent. Like, I let it go on and I sort of indulged in it and
you
filmed it.
You kept filming that, egged him on.
Of course. But it was that moment where I'm like, oh my God, like collaborative filmmaking is like in some ways like even more dangerous or even more potentially uncomfortable because you know, maybe like a festival or like a ritual, it allows actions that maybe aren't as easy to express in the sort of everyday, maybe like a Saturnalia or something.
That's, I mean, it's fascinating. Then becomes this, I mean, this storyline that you can play with, if you wanted to use it like on its surface level, or it can be about like Buddy's need to act out. I mean, yeah, you can go all of these different places with it, but yeah, in the moment I imagine that must have been pretty fraught when you're just, I mean, you realize like Buddy has expressed his intention and now he's acted on it, and it's like it feels like it's a monster that you've created.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also it's just sort of like, oh shit, because like I thought this like collaborative sort of thing would be like this silver bullet to like wash my hands of any sort of indecency of the documentary form. And then I'm realizing like, actually it's like even worse potentially, or like, you know, it's like just, it can create these new set of problems I hadn't anticipated. So yeah, it was like a very good instructive moment to realize, you know, you're always navigating, complex ethical territory, and it's not like one thing of like, oh, I do collaborative film, like I'm such a good person. It's like it's in each action, it's in each choice, and there's not some like rule that you can like, you know, sort of prescribe to people to like make sure it's okay.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear more from Carmine Grimaldi about how collaboration can happen off camera. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, True False programmer Abby Sun is discussing collaboration with filmmaker Carmine Grimaldi. The bond between a filmmaker and a subject can dictate just how collaborative a film ends up being. And for Grimaldi, building that bond often happens off camera. Here's Abby Sun.
So, I mean, another interesting thing is that, I mean, you said that, I think, I mean, you discovered this problem about collaborative filmmaking, but it sounds like because your work had been so collaborative, not to just use that word over and over again, but because you had worked so closely together with Buddy and with Sheila, it sounds like they got what was happening afterwards, that Sheila, she like immediately like realized what was happening, and she realized the intention behind Buddy, at least on a little, like on for the film, on the level of being for the film, she like realized that intention. So like working closely with them, I guess this is true no matter how you film, but that helped kind of you navigate this problem that it also brought on. So like it created this problem, but it helped you get out of it too.
Yeah, and I mean, and in Sheila's case, like, if that at that moment wasn't like quote unquote collaborative, or we weren't like scripting something, like it was collaborative in maybe the sort of way that people think of observational film, right? Like she knew I was filming, and like we moved into a different room, and I moved in with them, and like, yeah, I followed them, and like she knew that to some extent that like I was there documenting it, and she was okay with that, and so. Yeah, I mean, I think after developing these relationships for a long time, there's like a certain amount of like trust and like mutual affection, where you feel warmly towards the person you're working with both ways, and you trust things are unfolding in a decent way.
Do you hear from Buddy all the time? Like, hey, we should do this.
Yeah, I get calls from him a lot, Actually, so we Buddy recently won a cruise. And on the radio, you know, like 101.2 Monster FM or whatever. And like he called up and like happened to win this trivia game. And so he has these two tickets. And I'm like, you know, he was like, do you want to go with me? And I'm like, absolutely. And so I think this summer we're going to go and film on the cruise and see what comes of that. And so, yeah, it's sort of an ongoing thing where I try to visit when I can. And we talk and sort of share ideas. You know, I think a big breakthrough with him was that a long time ago we were filming. At that time, I was filming my friend Patrick when we first went to the carnival, and he had talked about this dream interpretation book. And there's this dream interpretation book that he had always used throughout his life. His grandfather had given it to his father, had given it to him, and it was a way of understanding dreams, but also predicting futures and all of these things. And one day my friend Patrick was in Philadelphia and he calls me and he's like, I think I found the book. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I think I found it. He's like, and it was written by this, like, clearly this, like, sort of like this guy from the Midwest who was like a fake German mystic who had this like outrageously fake German name and wrote this like incredible tome in which anything you look up, like juniper, like if you dream about juniper, there is something in there to tell you if you're going to like lose a loved one or not. And he found this book. It's an amazing book. And the first like 50 pages are like the most dense sort of like pseudoscientific quack babble from the early 1900s like you've ever read. It's like almost incomprehensible. Anyways, Buddy had lost this book years ago in a fire. And so when I went to visit him, like my friend Patrick picked up this book and I brought it to Buddy. And that became the sort of thread that we began to collaborate with. And so we would go through and read the book and like find out different scenarios or like talk about his dreams. He would sit on the porch and like neighbors would come by and tell their dreams, you know, in an organic way. They would come by and be like, well, I had a dream about climbing this mountain and making $1 million. And Buddy would be like, and he'd like try to look something up to explain what this dream might mean.
Mountain, climb, $1 million. What does that all mean together?
Exactly. And it always involves like your loved one dying. Basically every entry in this book is like the most pessimistic book I've ever read. It's really heartbreaking. But I think in the case of him, it was showing that I was willing to and wanted to film things that he wanted to film, but also bringing this book, which I think had meant a lot to him growing up. And the fact that I wanted to include that into it, I think, was exciting for him. And that gets back to what we were talking about before about you know, what level you're talking about collaborating. Is it about signing a consent form? Is it about scripting things? Or is it about allowing the sort of collaboration to genetically alter the film itself, to change the style, to sort of take it aesthetically in ways that maybe are out of your control or less predictable. When I'm working with people, I'm always looking for something like that. And so in the case of Bill and Maggie May, it was the way they played music and the different tones it was and the way they would collaborate on the music together and what that could do. And with Buddy, it was collaborating and with this book and allowing this book to begin to structure the sort of spine of the film, maybe.
Carmine Grimaldi is a doctoral candidate at the University of Chicago and visiting fellow in the Department of History of Science at Harvard. His films have been screened internationally and his essays have appeared in The Atlantic. He spoke with True False programmer Abby Sun. If you want to learn more about the animator Boaz Balakhson, check out digitalboaz.com. That's digital. BOAZ.com. This episode was produced by Sebastian Martinez and edited by Ryan Femuliner and Bram Sablesmith. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. Well, that's it for this first season of the True False podcast. We're already in the process of making season 2, which will be full of great new interviews, and we've got some changes up our sleeves. I want to thank everyone who made this thing possible. All those people whose names you hear in the credits. And I want to thank you for listening.